It's Great Mondays Radio. I'm Josh Levine, your host, founder of Great Mondays. We help executives from hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations build cultures that attract, engage, and retain top talent. If you'd like to be a guest on our program, hang out for about 20 minutes and I'll tell you how. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Great Mondays Radio. How do we survive in the year 2025? It does feel like an overwhelming amount of change is coming for us. And my good friend and I think human luminary, Robin Zander, is with us today. A luminary of being human is what I mean. He is the executive director of the Responsive Conference, which I will be heading toward to in Oakland in just a few days, and he's the founder of Zander Media. He has some interesting, I think, perspective on how we're going to move forward in this crazy world of change and how we will survive when AI comes for us. Robin Zander, welcome to Great Mondays Radio, finally.
So good to be here with you, Josh.
So you have been running Responsive for many years, the Responsive Conference. It's one of my favorites. And I want to start with that because it's something that almost, I know running events is no easy feat and it can feel thankless, though I do know that you love getting all these people together and sharing what you know and getting other people to share together. Why have you spent so much time and energy on Responsive? Let's start with that. What motivates you to put together something that's so hard to do?
Thank you. Yeah, it's so glad to be here. So glad to be with you and your audience. I mean, it's funny you say, you know, this thankless task or this difficult task. And I'm like, I think my true answer is I just really like doing hard things. Like yeah. I sat for 2 minutes at 42 degrees in my cold plunge this morning. I love to write mostly because it's constantly stretching my brain. I like to convene people because it's like hard to do, but actually it is a very thankful task, right? The number of people, one of my very early events, the person who was producing for me and one of our speakers got married a couple of years later and have been happily married for the 10 years since. So like the Tony Hsieh, rest in peace, was a friend, you know, a sort of acquaintance friend prior to his passing. Yeah. He always talked about the spontaneous connections, the constructed spaces where people bump into each other like billiard balls and you never know what's going to happen. But if you create enough of those spaces, the luck surface area is going to increase. And so I run events because it's a thing that is uniquely human. We need more of those in this world where most of us spend, if we're fortunate enough to have information-based jobs, spend our time looking at screens, right? And moving pixels around and sending email and call that work. And what we lack is the physical touch, the human interaction, the je ne sais quoi of what happens when three people get together and share ideas.
Yeah, it does feel like that. I mean, I don't know about you, but whenever I get an email in my inbox for a virtual conference, it's immediate no for me, dog. You know what I mean?
I spend enough of my time talking to people on the phone and on Zoom.
I mean, you would think, right? Like, and this is the false assumption that we all made and the mistake we all learned in the lockdown, the pandemic, which is we can just take what we did with all these amazing video and audio, and we can just take what we did in person and bring it online. And that's the same thing. And it's so far from the same thing. You've got some amazing speakers that are coming to the conference, and you have in the past. There's amazing people in the audience, but it's like, well, I guess maybe I just kind of ran that over. So you have amazing speakers, and I'm going to learn stuff, but it's the people in the audience that I'm running into. I'm meeting new people. I'm seeing folks that I didn't know I was going to see. And it's such, I like that idea of increasing the surface area of luck and energy. And it's just so, if you do it online, you're stripping out all of what makes a conference interesting, even though technically you're like, you're going to still see these people talk. So I think that brings us to kind of what do we do in a world that's kind of increasingly like just technically capable. What are we going to be doing with our lives? And what is our job? What should we be doing as humans? Like, what is our value if we've got these AGI, super intelligent, you know, things that can answer all the questions and figure out all the problems? Like, what do we do?
That's one of the eternal questions. And I actually think that's been a question that we've been asking for generations and probably for the span of human history. Anytime we're not like running from tigers and trying to find enough food to survive. But actually, just for the entrepreneurs in the audience, I would push back a little bit at the idea that it's all moving in that direction. I just bought a house, my first, and had a tradesperson here quoting the cost of replacing the roof this morning. We're so far away from AGI replacing roofs. And I know, so for those listening, in 2016, I opened up a restaurant in San Francisco called Robin's Cafe. I had no restaurant experience up until that point. We opened it on 3 weeks' notice. I sold it on Craigslist 3 years later. So like a wild story. Restaurants were wildly backwards. And they've caught up a little bit, but like when I got started in the restaurant industry, most restaurants in our neighborhood used paper timesheets. That's fortunately no longer the case. People actually clock in and clock out online a little bit, right? But, you know, roofing is done on paper, right? Or at most you get a PDF with the quote of somebody who's gonna, you know, offer the cost of whatever it is to replace the cost of your roof. There are so many industries that are not based on digital communication, that are not Zoom conversations. And increasingly the divide between those of us who can spend our lives sending email, communicating on Zoom, meeting in person when that, you know, when the stakes are really high, but like information work and not is bigger, is wider than ever. And there's a ton of opportunity to bring those people along, right? To bring a pool repair person into the modern era with AI. And what that is, I haven't looked at pools in AI yet, but like there's so much change coming. I actually think as fast as things are moving in 2025, we're just at the beginning of how quickly things are gonna go.
I mean, for context, and I think this is probably something that everybody knows at this point, but it's like every 50 years, there's a newspaper article about a thing that's going to replace work, right? Replace us. And, you know, it's like, it's forever, right? Like that's always happening. And yet here we are. What is it? Okay. So sure. HVAC, pool repair or pool maintenance, lawn care, all those things, blue collar as it were. But then there is all of this that all of the, you know, kind of digital collar workers that are out here. I think it's a false, I think as you've called out, it's a false pretense to say, okay, you're going to be out of work in 18 months. Like that's not going to happen. Things are going to shift. But I do think it's useful to think about what is the value of a human and how do we continue to, and as you put it so eloquently, do the things that you love, even if it's hard? And what, you know, how should we be, if not sending emails and thinking through things, like, what is it? What is it that makes us human? And how can we can continue to be valuable to ourselves, to our neighbors, to our families, to our colleagues in the world?
Yeah. I hear a lot of fear in the world right now about what's going to be the future of my work, what's going to be the future of, as you say, human purpose and flourishing. Somebody who's talked about this really eloquently is Susie Welsh. She's a PhD in org design. She was the editor for the Harvard Business Review. She's a lecturer at Stern School of Business and runs their Center on Workplace Flourishing. She's going to be speaking at Responsive Conference, but quite independently, she has a great book called Becoming You. This idea of career reinvention, which I feel like I've spent the last 15 years apologizing for having worked in more industries than most people meet. And now I look at it and I'm like, no, I actually feel like, so most of my work today outside of Responsive Conference is Xander Media. I run a small little media agency. A lot of the work we deliver in terms of deliverables to the client, it's either brand strategy or video production. And video production may or may not get completely gobbled up by AI in the next 2 years. We're having a great year this year. I don't see signs that it's slowing down, but I definitely am planning that video looks very different 2 years from now than it does today. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I certainly wouldn't suggest someone go to college to study film. Like, it's just too different what you're going to learn in school versus the actual realities on the ground. And I don't really care about film. I care about storytelling. I care about moving people's emotions. I care about behavior change. I care about these things that are fundamentally human. If video doesn't happen anymore, and instead we're listening to Homer chant the Odyssey over a fire and, you know, a group of people, if we're back to living in caves, the utility of video is accessing people where they are, getting their attention is the attention economy, and getting them to take some action or change a belief, or, you know, the Seth Godin quote, people like us do things like this. Tribes, right? Create people in tribes, create people in consensus towards a common cause. And so the utility of entrepreneurship for me is that I feel very well positioned to change my career completely and completely reinvent myself 2 years from now, if I need to, because my work goes away. I don't think we're ever going to live in a world where humans don't want some degree of work and meaning. I suspect that we will have universal basic income, at least in the United States, in our lifetimes. I also suspect it will be pretty measly and not allow you to eat the food that you want or pay the mortgage on your house if you so desire. The Wall-E Pixar movie equivalent of, like, we're all in, you know, digital strollers on a spaceship getting fed food from straws, like, doesn't look very appealing as a future for the human race. No. And so in many ways, you know, it's up to us to decide what is that future? What are at its core, I think, what are the skills that make us most resilient proof against what technology is coming for right now?
The conflict or the two paths, I don't even know how to frame this. So there's two ideas that I'm holding in my head. And there's the what is meaningful work. And then there is what I am going to get paid for. And I will enter this piece by describing kind of a logic chain that a Substack economist that I read, he talked about that the reason that our great grand forefathers and foremothers, like, fought the wars and survived pestilence and were able to make it through was so that the next generation could actually learn math and science. And the math and science, you know, to be able to solve illness, hunger, you know, it allows us to then move into art, writing, you know, the sort of higher, you know, it's like there's this logic chain of, like, building forward and doing things. And we are almost we're in a kind of space like that where we have a lot of free time, and a lot of us have not just hobbies, but side hustles, right? Where you have so much time, you can actually do a thing. And is the rest, is it like we're all going to end up just being hobbyists and survive? Like, how, you know, it's like, is there going to be a market for this kind of art and poetry, or, you know, how do we make this kind of money? Because we know the arts are well worth it and meaningful, but very difficult to make a living in.
Yeah, there's so much there. One of the questions I often ask myself is kind of a pie in the sky. If I had $10 million, what would I do with my time?
Okay, great frame.
And good. And it's a good framing for me, and it's been a useful framing for people I ask, and everyone has a different number. And I don't mean $1 billion because I can't visualize a billion things, right? I mean, some number that I can actually keep in my head that would be life-changing, but actually like I can kind of imagine a little bit what my life would be like. And if I had $10 million, what I would do is I would run Xander Media. I would write 4 hours a day. I would get in my cold plunge every morning, and I would still run Responsive Conference. I'd probably be a little less stressed about the P&L of Responsive Conference. I'd probably say no to some of the most boring Xander Media clients, but I would still do the same things that I do because I derive enough meaning from those things. And simultaneously with that, I was thinking, as you said, income versus joy. I'm a former professional acrobat. I, you know, have performed on stage for many years, backflips and all sorts of things. I still have a very robust physical practice, and I have a rower, an erg concept rower, and I hate it. My girlfriend loves it. I hate it. It is the most painful current physical like activity that I do, minus maybe the cold plunge. But the cold plunge, at least I love. The rower just feels like grueling, right? Hugh Jackman's body notwithstanding, it just feels grueling.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know the only way to learn to love rowing is to do it every day. And what's going to happen if I row 5 minutes every day for a year is I'm going to row every day for the rest of my life. And I would probably benefit from doing that. I'm a runner, right? The gymnastics background and everything. But like rowing is so efficient. I can do it for 5 minutes and break a sweat. And I don't. And if I did enough, I would fall in love, and then I would do it every day for the rest of my life, and my life would be better. And I think that that's how work can happen too. It's not do what you love and never work a day in your life. It's do stuff that's close enough to things that you could learn to enjoy for long enough that you fall in love with those things, and then keep doing those things until you can't not, and do those things forever, because it is the process of doing that builds the habit of loving that builds the process of doing it forever.
I love this. And I've seen a few things around this where it's like the idea of like efficiency, like trying to get it done is in fact where we've all been mentally, right? Like it's efficient. It's like, I'm doing it faster, but the point isn't to get it done. It's actually to do it. So when you're saying it's like, do the thing, I think that is one of the key differentiators between us and AGI. It's AGI is here to make it faster, but humans, you know, the act of creating, like if you could just make a, like if you just, a thing just shows up, it's way different. It's the difference between buying and creating. Buying is fun for a moment, but creating, it sort of resonates, right? Like just like your cold bath, right? For the rest of the day, you feel it. And for me, it's like a day isn't worthwhile unless I've created something.
Yep.
Could be writing, could be a model, could be a drawing, could be, you know, anything. But that to me is where we're, I think, fulfilling. We haven't used that term, but that is meaningful work to me. And I wonder how might the act of creating a process be valuable to others, to the world, right? Because right now it's like create a thing, do a thing, make a thing, sell the thing. And even if you're working inside of a company, it's like, what are your tasks that you're trying to do? I don't know. This is not something that we sort of pre-planned. So you know, it's a crazy question, but like, I don't know. I think there's something, might there be something there to kind of like, how do we shift our mindset? Maybe the better question is, how do we shift our mindset from productivity to, you know, processivity or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have an answer, but I was listening to somebody talk about time-saving technique the other day, And he was saying, this was the entrepreneur Alex Hormozy, who's written a bunch of books does a lot around lead generation and offers.
Yep.
Brilliant marketer, disagree with a lot of what he has to say, but nonetheless, I mean, I think he just broke a world record in book sales. He was saying, hire somebody to make your food for you, you know, eat Chipotle every day, save the time that you would spend cooking to go work on your entrepreneurship, your business. Mm-hmm. And like, if the goal is to save time, I get it, right? If the goal is to save time, I'm going to do a very intense 30-minute HIIT workout, not an hour-long trail run. My goal in exercise is to enjoy my exercise, not to get six-pack abs, which I have, right? Like, the goal is to exercise. The goal is to enjoy. The goal of food, to me, is making great food, sitting with my girlfriend and having an incredible meal, having deliciously sharp kitchen knives, having plates that I enjoy the texture of eating off of, right? Like, we've only got this life, as far as I can tell. Like, the goal is to enjoy it. And if you hate cooking and have always hated cooking, okay, fine, right? Like, there are plenty of people who will try to persuade you to love cooking. Like, I'm not going to do that. Mm-hmm. But like, great, love going out to fancy restaurants or to your local burrito shop or whatever. But like, enjoy the process. Don't just delegate it. The goal is not hyper productivity. The goal is doing enough of whatever you need to do to get to the outcome that you want. And I don't think most people are spending time asking themselves, what do I want?
Is there a gap between what I want and what the world wants, right? There's sort of that Venn diagram, like what I'm good at, what the world wants, what they'll pay me for or something like that.
Yeah,
whatever that,
100%.
Like, right? Like, is there a gap, like, and maybe this is a different way of asking the sort of long-winded rambling that I did before, but it's like I get and you get a lot of joy from doing work and being productive. And I think we haven't really interrogated that enough, right? Because now I can use ChatGPT to produce an interview guide. You know, like, I'll spend 15 minutes programming it, and then I'll get a good interview guide, and then I can iterate on that. But it's not as satisfying, but I did do it, you know, it is done. And what's the trade-off, and what is the work? You know, it's like, I guess maybe going right back to our first question, which is like, what's my role in the world, right? Like, I think we're bouncing back and forth between what I find valuable and fulfilling, and what I should be doing for the world, and the sort of inherent, like, when you are in the cold plunge, you're doing it for yourself. When you are making food, you're doing it for two people or four people. When you're hosting Responsive, you're doing it for 150 people. I don't know. Maybe it's more like, what do I do that can create that value or create something for somebody else?
Yeah. Be useful, right? I've been spending a lot of time in the last 2 years writing about and thinking about sales and trying to really redefine sales as not the used car salesman who's trying to push his product on you, whether or not you need a used car, but be useful to people, have something to offer, talk to lots and lots of people, back to Lux Surface Area. And then when you find somebody who wants what you have to offer, invite them powerfully towards it. And when you meet the 9 out of 10 other people who don't want what you have to offer but want something else, be useful to them too. There's a great scene in the old time, I think, 1950s classic Miracle on 34th Street, where there's a Santa Claus who's employed by a Macy's department store to push product to parents for their kids. And, you know, the parents come in and say, oh, I want this other toy that, you know, I can't find it on the shelves. Where is it? And he's like, oh, across the street, the other department store, you should go over there. And his manager finds out and gets absolutely pissed and is about to fire him when those customers who went across the street, and this is kind of apocryphal, but it's also true, come back and say, that Santa did so well by us that now we're going to be loyal shoppers at this Macy's for all time because you treated us so well and you cared about what was right for us, not just what was right for the store. And the manager does a 360 or 180 and comes back around and is like, you're the best salesman ever. There's a usefulness in being useful to people. And you and I both run our businesses. We have things to sell. And I think back to, you know, 21st century skills, resilient, durable skills that matter more in an age of AI, convening people, persuading people, selling people, but selling people in a way that is good for them long term, right? That builds connection. We don't even think about that as sales. We think about it as helping people.
Yeah.
Because the more we can do that, the more goodwill you have, the more connections you have. And ultimately, right, why do I run Responsive Conference? Why do you run this radio, right? Why do you run Great Mondays Radio? Because it's a convening and humans need to gather.
Yes. You're saying useful. I'm going back to be of service to somebody.
Yeah.
And maybe there's a hierarchy of utility, self, you know, partner, family, community, right? Like where you can be of service to help others, however that might be. And sometimes you get paid for it and sometimes you don't, right? Like I think about that for me, right? It's bringing more people along the journey, understanding the power of culture as a tool in business that supports people and the enterprise. And some of the things it's like, I do Great Mondays Radio for free. I'm going to do next month, 2 months, I'm going to do this talk that's like almost is for nothing, but I'm going to do it just because I get to do it. I get to talk to other people. Now, I couldn't just do that, right? Of course, I have other things that bring in, you know, make it a sustainable living, but I want to sort of zoom out to encompass all of this in this, like the things that technology can't do. What is the unique humanness of gathering that will never change? And before we started recording, you sort of described your future children. You don't have kids now, but God willing, in the future, what will you teach them? And it makes me think about my son is going into college next year. And what is it that they're going, you know, I'm going to guide him to learn, and what are the principles? And because the things, like you said, you're talking about this, like, you're like, I don't know, video, like you've been doing video for as long as I've known you, but you're willing to let that go.
And in a heartbeat.
And because it's not the hard skills aren't what's going to define you any longer in the future.
Yep. So, and actually for me, never have, right? Like yeah. I've never been defied by hard skills.
Yeah.
When I first moved to San Francisco in 2007, somebody at Toastmasters, I was just learning how to talk publicly, terrified, shy kid. She said, you know, what are your hard skills? And I said, what are hard skills? And she said, oh, you know, things like coding and right. Things that are not people skills. And I was like kind of shy and ashamed and maybe a little tipsy. And I said, I don't have any hard skills, right? Like I'm all soft skills. They're now redefined as durable skills, right? Mm-hmm. Guess who've had the best durable skills in the world, right? Like Donald Trump is incredible at getting attention and keeping attention.
Yeah.
Right. Sam Altman is an incredible of OpenAI is one of the best deal makers alive in the world today. Steve Jobs was an incredible showman, right? Henry Ford, also an incredible showman. The utility of durable skills is par excellence, is above reproach. And so what would I teach my future kids, or what would I hope that they would learn? First of all, probably first and foremost, introspection, know thyself, right? Whatever it is, keep a journal, sit with a therapist, go for long walks and ponder the world philosophy. Like the utility of being able to think about what you're thinking about is timeless because you can continue to improve, right? Ultimately, I think kids' job, not job, but like the kids' role is to fall in love with learning. If we can succeed, if we succeed in raising kids as a society who love learning, we've won. And if we don't, kind of think we're not going to make it. Mm-hmm. Like it's actually kind of as dire as that. But I would teach kids to surf because that forces you to learn to swim. And it forces you to reckon with that there are things much more powerful in the universe than you, i.e. waves. And if you fight those waves, you're going to lose. But if you learn to ride them, you can have the time of your life. I would teach kids jujitsu at least a tiny bit because the utility of as a shy guy who got, or kid who got beat up a lot in third grade, the sensation of getting beat up, getting back up, getting beat up, getting back up, of people who have more skill being fundamentally better than you, right? It's three-dimensional chess. It's chess with your body. And there is a usefulness to learning that fear is not a definition, that when you're getting pummeled by somebody who's much more skilled than you are at jujitsu, like they've got more skill, right? You can keep struggling, but muscle and force isn't going to do it for you. It's skill and it's practice.
Yeah.
And I would have them become Cutco door-to-door salespeople or knock on the neighbors' houses and offer to mow their lawns, right? The utility of talking to strangers and getting told no, or right, in my case, my very first job at 5 years old was Robin's Pumpkin Patch. All the neighbors would come up and be like, oh, you're so cute. You're selling pumpkins. Here's $5. And it was revolutionary for me at the time. And I still remember the sensation of walking home from school, opening up the little metal tin and there's cash inside and people have left with my pumpkins. The usefulness of knowing how to ask for things, right? Or when someone's trying to hustle you, my dad had a friend who was a former Navy SEAL who said like, okay, I have to leave right now, but I'll buy all six of these pumpkins for $100, take it or leave it. And I remember like freezing up and then saying no, and he left. And then I calculated and I was like, that was $250 worth of pumpkins. I'm glad I said no, right? But how do you respond under pressure in an environment where money's on the line is a real skill, right? And to do so without force, without upset, without berating your customer or being berated by a salesman, but just to set boundaries, right? Ultimately, sales is about boundaries. And that's a really, really valuable 21st century skill.
Durable skills. I like that. I like that word. I like that phrase. It's because so much is changing, right? How do you survive when everything is coming at you. I had this experience a few times and then I taught it to my son, right? When I'm in a good space and I have my wits about me and I understand what's happening, I can verbally, like, I feel like I'm Neo in the Matrix and I can have a conversation with somebody or even an argument. And it's like, I see exactly where the whole thing's going, right? Like I know exactly what, and it's just, and I can't get to that space all the time, but to me, there's this, and I've learned more and more, right? I'm like, oh, that feeling, how did that happen? I want to do that more, right? Like, and you master that ability. And I've taught at least that exists to him. I don't know that he's had that moment yet, but to me, there's this like experience, this capacity that I can tap into that will follow me no matter what I'm doing.
Yep.
And that is maybe the very essence. That is an example of the very essence of being human.
Bob Dylan, I didn't make the music. It just flowed through me. Right. And yeah. That comes of relentless decades of practice.
Yeah.
And then completely letting go and right. And I have that in moments with clients where it's like, you know, I kind of feel like it's a precious commodity, but also I give it away to random strangers on the internet where I'm just okay, let's go. You need to rebrand your business. We've got 5 minutes left on this Zoom call or this phone call or whatever. Here's three ideas. And I know that one of those ideas is absolutely brilliant. Maybe they do, maybe they don't, but it's right? It's goodwill out, and it's not goodwill with any expectation. My best friend says, if you put enough bread across the water, good things are going to come back to you. I always think about, like, you know, a swarm of ducks coming back.
Yeah, that's
but
what I thought
but
too.
Like, but you never know, right? You yeah. be useful, you be of service. We're yeah. saying the same thing to enough people.
Yeah.
You know, I don't remember who said it, but, you know, you want to be a billionaire, go be helpful to a billion people and see what happens to you.
Right. Right. But puts the onus back on you, right? Be of service, and you're trading value. Some of that value is money. Some of that value maybe will be money in the future. And some of that value is just a friendly smile.
Right.
Which I think is incredible when I, you know, I get so much from connecting with people. This has been really, really thought-provoking, Robin. Thank you. I wasn't exactly sure where this was going to go, but I kind of love where we went. We sort of, again, like the processing of it, right? Like, not the productivity, but the processivity, right? Like, that was,
yeah.
that was, I think we did that pretty well. Robin Zander, founder of Zander Media, executive director of Responsive Conference. You can learn more about this incredible conference that he puts on, responsiveconference.com. It is happening, you tell me, it's an what the dates, location.
On your calendar, and yeah. I know you got a ticket, September
yeah.
17th and 18th, 2025, at the Oakland Museum of California. You can learn more at www.responsiveconference.com. You can also just Google my name with a P, Robin P. Zander, and it and all things Robin on the internet will come up.
Will come to you across the water.
It's true, 100%. I'm not hard to find. But I would also say I was an inheritor of, I was a community member of this movement called responsive.org. Right. It was this manifesto is this manifesto that I did not write. I just inherited, called responsive.org. You can, that's the URL, .org. And it outlines the tensions facing organizations in the 21st century. Mm. The ways that we work historically don't work today. And that was true when this was written in 2015. It's even more true today. What do we then do? Right. And the first thing that I did was I ran a free event that we called an unconference based on open space technology, where the people who show up set the agenda and decide what we're going to talk about. This was in early 2016, long before the idea of responsive conference came to be, right? 10 years ago. And the utility of that day was then I had built a business and I built this conference and I have had luminaries. You said luminary. I don't think of that for me, but certainly that is true of the myriad New York Times bestselling authors, some of the most famous coaches and consultants in the world, you know, the CMO globally of PepsiCo, who was studying, you know, climate change and organizational resilience back in 2018, like these, in Chris Fussell, who led special operations under General Stanley McChrystal during the Iraq War. These incredible humans all came because I ran a free event for people like me doing things like this. And so for folks listening, yes, by all means, if you're interested, if this conversation has resonated, reach out. I'm happy to tell you more. You can email me personally at robin@zandermedia.com. But go do stuff. Go try stuff. Go get five people together for a weekly book club. Go organize that thing that you've always wanted to try, right? Because what we as humans need in work and in our communities is taking a little bit more risk, trying a little bit more things. Maybe you're going to fall on your face, but maybe you'll learn something from having done so that will help you for the next one. And as the rate of change continues to accelerate, right, we're just barreling towards a God only knows what. What we need is more gatherings, more convenings, more people who are out to be of service to each other. And so that would be my take home to the great Mondays radio audience, right? Is go be of service. Go be kinder than you have to be. Go try and help your fellow human, because everyone's a little holding their head in their hands at the rate of change. Yeah. And so you might as well do that in community.
Great. Amazing. Robin, thanks for coming on Great Mondays Radio. It's always lovely to see you. And I will see you at Responsive Conference in Oakland in just a few weeks.
Can't wait, Josh.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio. Hey, if you want to be a guest, head over to radio.greatmondays.com. And if you think this episode was interesting and your friends and fans would enjoy it, please share on social media. And if you want to get more people to understand the power of company culture in business today, please rate and review Great Mondays Radio on your podcast feed. It really helps us reach more people. If you want to hear more candid conversations with culture leaders, subscribe to Great Mondays Radio. I'd love to connect with you. Find me on LinkedIn at AKA Josh Levine, on YouTube at Great Mondays, and you can always email me, josh@greatmondays.com. Find out more about our work with hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations at greatmondays.com. I'm Josh Levine. Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio.